Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. This is Sandy Johnson in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in sunny Montclair, New Jersey.
All right, sunny Montclair, New Jersey. sunny Montclair, New Jersey. That's saying a lot this time of year. So that's good stuff. Hey, what's happening in everybody's design studios? We got lots of stuff happening over here. How about you guys?
I've got a longtime client that's asked me to make some really detailed maps, some international maps for PowerPoint. So I'm dipping my foot into the interesting world of GIS mapping and learning about new file formats. And it's very confusing, and because I only need a little tiny bit of it. So I don't want to become an expert, but I'm trying to make the most of my 14-day free trial for a $1,400 Illustrator plugin.
Let's hear it. For us, this episode right now, as it's being released, so if you're listening to it on release date, all three of us are in Seattle, Washington area attending Microsoft's MVP Summit. So our next episode, I'm pretty excited. It's going to be kind of a roundtable conversation with a number of PowerPoint MVPs and possibly a few Microsoft people. So that's going to be really fun.
Those are always fun.
They're not as easy to edit audio wise, no. But they are so much information. My life recently, though, has been, how many times can I fly coast to coast? I've been in meetings in Orlando, Miami, San Diego here, Miami again, Los Angeles, San Diego again, and then Seattle, followed by Phoenix, San Antonio. You know, it just kind of goes on. And every single one of them is, you know, a great presentation meeting using PowerPoint, Keynote, video. So I'm not complaining about anything there. It's just really funny how I'm bouncing from literally meeting in Miami to meeting in San Diego to meeting in Miami again to meeting in Los Angeles, just back and forth, lots of flying time.
And you always have energy. It's unbelievable. I got tired driving between Green Bay and Minneapolis for 2 years.
That's a long drive, depending on the weather.
That really well, it is. It's a five-hour drive.
What's happening with you, Sandy? What's happening in the studio?
Well, so nothing new, but you know, we were talking about my Bright Carbon interview, and yeah. I never brought it up in the past. And so for those of you who don't know, Bright Carbon is a niche presentation design and e-learning agency. And they reached out to me a few months ago and asked if I would agree to be interviewed. And so there is in the notes, you'll find the interview. It's a blog interview. So it's all text. Yeah.
Wow, awesome. So we get to go read it. I'm going to go download that for my next flight.
You know, she talks about how, you know, the question. So did you intend to get into the PowerPoint design business? You know, well, no one really does. No, they don't go to college to do that. So it talks a little bit about how I got into the business, being an MVP, awesome. Being on the guild. So check it out.
Well, what's happening in the world of news, PowerPoint presentation, everything else happening?
There was a political intersection last week. I think, Troy, you actually might have turned me on to this. Our friend Mitt Romney, who's announced his senatorial bid, had a major presentation failure.
And oh, my goodness.
Maybe it was just the remote. Maybe there were other things involved. But it seemed to be he just couldn't get slides to advance, and they would advance and when he didn't want them to. So there's a great little, I think, MSNBC mashup of
just we'll put a link to it because it's worth watching.
Just clip after clip after clip, just of things going wrong in the context of this.
So well, how long ago was it we talked about what you should do as a presenter to prepare? You know, one of them is practice with the technology, right?
Yeah. Or at the very least, when it does go wrong, don't make a huge thing about it and continue to, you know, blatant technology.
Yeah, right. The audience doesn't know what they don't know usually. I will say the remote he is holding, the making phone, is not an industry standard AV remote. It's not something I would ever give a presenter on stage. It looks more like kind of a conference room meeting level, you know, very close to the computer type of remote. So the technology was definitely not helping him at that point.
Sandy, I think you tweeted your services to him. Did I get him back to you?
I did. I can help you. Really, I can. I mean, just help you with that. And you don't throw your, it seemed like you at one point threw the microphone down. I can't remember, but anyway, so that's funny.
I'm going to stay on the little add-in news thing then, because Tools 2, which is a small add-in company that I really, really like, they just released an update that adds even more cool productivity features into its jam-packed toolbar. It's now 7.1.0. I installed it about a week and a half ago just to do a little beta test. It just went live within the last, very, very recently. And I have it installed on every computer I work on. It is the best $20 you can spend if you're looking for productivity gains. It's a little overwhelming. There are way too many things on that toolbar. It's like Photoshop. I don't think everybody knows exactly what everything does, but it's very, very cool. So a little bit of news. Nolan, anything for you? News?
Two more bits of software news. NX PowerLite Desktop 8 was just released this morning. We knew it was coming. Only problem with it, and I think they're doing like a 40% upgrade. It's like $15 to upgrade. Only problem with this is I have no idea what's new about it. They've been very cagey. They said something about new file formats, but they didn't list it. So I reached out to them and we're trying to figure out what's new, but I definitely use it. It's a great program. And also Haiku Deck snuck a little PowerPoint add-in into the store for themselves. Very odd, because Haiku Deck in most respects is a kind of a competitor to the PowerPoint. It's another way to create presentations, albeit much, much simpler. But with this plugin now, similar to, you know, the Noun Project plugin or Shutterstock or Pexels, you can import images from Haiku Deck, high quality Creative Commons imagery, which they offer. So you can do that. But then there's also a tab that says, you know, if you want templates, and you click the templates and it takes you to Haiku Deck's website. So it's a little, I don't know. It's weird. But that's one more thing.
Interesting collaboration, I guess. Well, I'm going to introduce Mitch here in a few minutes, but Mitch, while you're listening into all this, do you have any new news that you could, any presentation world news you could share with us? And we'll give a formal introduction to you in a few moments, but you're definitely top of mind for news.
Thanks for having me. We launched our product Beautiful AI about 2 weeks ago. I guess it'll be about 4 weeks when this airs. Beautiful AI is sort of a presentation tool for non-designers.
That is awesome. So yeah, this is going to be great. Beautiful, as in what makes a slide beautiful, is a very subjective thing to assess. Today, Nolan, Sandy, and myself are joined by Mitch Grasso, the founder of Slide Rocket and now Beautiful.ai, an online presentation design app that leverages, among other things, kind of the concept of artificial intelligence or AI for slide design. And as you just heard, it officially launched from beta February 6th. So this is a very timely guest. Having the opportunity to have Mitch join us, we took a cue from, nearly every major TV show that takes a headline from the news and creates an episode based on it. We're taking Mitch's company name and its mission as our conversation topic. Today, we have a great conversation about what makes beautiful presentation design and philosophies behind our presentation design decisions and creating beautiful, intelligent slide decks. So let's start off our conversation with kind of quotes, what makes beautiful presentation slides, and maybe what makes an ugly slide or a bad slide as well?
Well, I mean, I would say a catch-all would be just a lack of thoughtful design and sort of no thought given to the audience. That sort of thinking or non-thinking leads to content that, you know, is so small it literally can't be read, or layouts that, you know, bury the message, or cheesy photography. But, you know, I think it's often done with the excuse, and I've heard this even from professional graphic designers, of, oh, it's just PowerPoint. It's not meant to be designed, or it's just PowerPoint. It doesn't matter. And I think, yeah, that's the ugly, the ugliest stuff I've
seen. And it is ugly. Right. Oh, go ahead, Mitch.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I mean, design is about communication. You know, art is about something completely different. And, you know, you can't argue that presentations aren't at their heart communication devices, and therefore bad design would be bad communication and good design would be good communication.
That nails it. So many traditional graphic designers forget about design. It appears they're forgetting about design. For example, working on a grid when they create their presentations. We know here that when a slide is designed on a grid, there's better organization to the slide, so it's easier for the audience to understand. It's good slide-to-slide consistency. And when there's that inconsistency, the lack of consistency leads to cognitive overload. You know, people are stressed out. They don't know why. That's bad. I think just working on a grid is, or not working on a grid is what I would define as bad slides.
Well, bad if it's not designed or purposeful, I would say.
Yes.
I will say that I know that all three of us actually participated in the Beautiful AI beta program, and I and my team.
Sorry about that.
No, it was great because it's, you know, I'm finding a huge influx of new presentation apps, most of them being web-based. And it was really, really interesting. But to follow on Sandy's note, some of your things like your timeline feature in there, it puts things into a grid layout that just looks balanced, even though it's very stylized and there's some options in there. Now, I did have some problems with actually adjusting the grid when I didn't want it to be on the grid or making things fit. But you know, it does exactly what Sandy said. Your, you know, Beautiful AI kind of says we need to create a balanced layout and we won't let things be randomized or just chaotic. I would also say what makes a slide beautiful or what doesn't is that, you know, the whole concept of too much content on one slide, too small a content, too pixelated, poorly cropped, or too dark of photos, you know, all these kind of negative things, and they just make it hard. There are so many things that, well, let's see, how do I want to say this? There are so many things that good content is there, but it is used wrong, and suddenly it becomes kind of an ugly to the audience presentation.
And this was really the basis of what I was going for when I built this product. So as you mentioned, you know, I previously was the founder of a company called Slide Rocket, which was a very much an online PowerPoint competitor. You know, we were one of the first tools to do all this collaboration stuff and, you know, sharing analytics and things like that. But at its heart, Slide Rocket was an authoring tool because just like you guys, I come from a design background. I was trying to build a tool that solved problems for me as a designer. I wanted the best of Keynote, the best of PowerPoint, you know, in an online tool. But at the end of the day, our users were still creating, well, bad and ugly presentations. And we struggled with, you know, how do we make this easier? You know, how do we make it so that they can create better presentations? And we experimented with building like a template system. And we had an inspiration gallery, I think we called it. And you could download an entire presentation template that a professional designer had created. But templates are really hard to work with if your data doesn't exactly fit into that template. So the example I always give is, you know, you download the team slide and it has three team members with their pictures and a bio underneath. And that works great if you have three team members. But if you have four, now you're back into authoring. You're dragging boxes around, you're resizing and things like that. So Beautiful AI was created to build these smart templates, sort of smart art on steroids. Like what if you took that concept that PowerPoint had of auto-generated, you know, visualizations and extended it all the way to the full slide? And, you know, it's an interesting challenge because on one end you have the flexibility of a blank canvas tool like PowerPoint where that timeline can be one of 10 billion different variations versus a true template that you might download from some sort of stock library where you can't do anything. And then Beautiful AI, which is trying to thread the needle and saying, well, we're going to give you some authoring ability. We're going to let you do some things, but we're not going to let you do anything, everything you want to do, which is maybe what you ran into. But we're going to ensure that it always looks good. We're going to make sure that all the presentation design best practices are followed. So that you're not typing too much text, that you're not using bad colors, that you're keeping stuff on a grid as much as we can. And it's an interesting challenge because that can be frustrating, that constraint. I mean, it is certainly opinionated software, and it's enforcing that opinion on the people.
I like it.
So can things be beautiful for the user and the presenter as well as the audience, as well as the people actually viewing it, sort of what you're getting at with the user interface?
Yeah. You mean as far as when you're actually presenting?
Or presenting or creating. I mean, is this just for the audience, or do we want beautiful slides for ourselves?
As you know, absolutely. I mean, presenting is hard. You know, I mean, it's a big process. Mm-hmm. You've got to, you know, come up with this story. You've got to make it look good, and then you've got to get in front of people and pitch some idea that, you know, most likely you're trying to convince them of something. And the last thing you want to do is feel insecure or be making excuses for your slides. You want to know what's backing you up, looks good, and communicates well. So I think it has a huge benefit to the presenter, and I think it has a huge benefit to the presentee as well.
Right, to bring it back to Mitt.
Exactly. Bring it back to Mitt, where at one point he even said, well, this is too small to read, but...
Right? That was my part.
That was crazy. So... Exactly. I think everyone can benefit.
We've already touched on this, but I think the message itself benefits, right? So that's the non-human part. Yes. I mean, it's the message benefits from a well-crafted, technically, visually, aesthetically, you know, presentation.
Well, going on that, what about when, let's just say, aesthetics kind of trump content and the audience walks away saying, wow, what a beautiful presentation, but has no memory of actually what was presented. I mean, how do we kind of fit beautiful versus memorable content together?
Yeah, I mean, that's something I don't really want to hear. I mean, at first it's a great compliment, but then you kind of realize, well, why did I do this? It wasn't just for aesthetics. It was, you know, to help communicate this message. You know, I think TED Talks are a good example where, you know, everybody knows about them, but they're a good example where slides really never upstage the speaker or the message. And I think that's done in a few ways, including the upfront design, but also in the editing of the videos, right? Because nobody ever says, you know, what great TED slides, they generally comment on the speaker or the message.
You know, Troy, you're speaking hypothetically, but it literally happened to me recently. The slides were gorgeous. I even commented to the person sitting next to me, these slides are stunning. The presentation was on how to make presentations memorable, but I don't remember what the conversation was about. I remember the beautiful slides. So, but it's probably my mindset. I'm a designer looking for design ideas, perhaps, and I got sidetracked. But regarding TED's, what?
Is that a concern, Mitch, where your slides are too beautiful, even though the content's there?
No, I don't really think that's, I mean, I really think they're two separate axes, you know, whether your story is being communicated and whether your message is effective is a different axis than how beautiful it is.
Yes.
And I would argue that having something more beautiful will never hurt you necessarily than, but having something less effective could.
That's a great thing. Beautiful versus effective. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the way you put that, two axes, rather they're not inversely proportional, or really in a way related at all. But it is, yeah, it's those two axes.
I mean, what I would say is that what you're getting at is really what makes Beautiful AI possible, in a sense, is that, you know, if you separate design from sort of, there's core good design, you know, using the right fonts, making the right sizes, putting stuff on a grid, all the things you've addressed. And then there's sort of that aesthetic flourishes on top of it. And that's where the stuff really becomes unnecessary.
You know,
do I need to have my logo on every slide? Do I need to have ornamentation everywhere? Do I need to have, animation that's gratuitous? Those sorts of things have become less, more understood. I think, you know, we've seen a real maturity in design in the last 10 years, while companies like Apple and Target and Tesla and BMW, you know, where design has sort of become more at the forefront and people sort of understand what minimalist design is. And it's not all about how much stuff can I cram in, how many colors can I use, how many backgrounds can I create. And that benefited what we were trying to do, because those things are really hard to automate. But if it's a simple, more minimal design, it's something easier for us to tackle.
On the whole aesthetics versus content, I think I would say the audience is the king. Everything has to be designed mm-hmm. with the audience focus. The second focus is, can the presenter actually know enough to say about what's being there so it supports them? Doing the design in an aesthetic way, is the problem a presentation designer solves or a presentation software solves? But saying that there are visual aesthetics doesn't give a solution in and of itself. They have to be a combination. You know, there's a crossroads of where things look balanced and good for the audience, and they have enough information to make the presentation flow.
I agree. So then we're talking about what goes on the slide. What about beautiful or elegant coding? There are sound reasons for making your code simple and elegant. Is there such a thing as technical beauty in building of a presentation? What would you guys think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the things I put in all my contracts is that, you know, the presentation is going to be fully editable whenever possible. And 99% of the time mm-hmm. it is. So that means no flattened JPEGs, icons are all true vectors, it can be recolored, colors can be applied from the palette, font themes are used. So the user can change, you know, a number at the last minute. And to me, that's beautiful. That's mm-hmm. elegant. You know, that's, again, it's one of the reasons we talk, Troy and I love InDesign. It's like, it's so well put together. You can make one tiny change and it just sort of ripples through and changes 200 pages. And I don't know, that's beautiful.
That's awesome. Cause ripples was the exact word that came to mind as you said that. So Mitch, now really quick, beautiful AI has, I can think of three export or usability functions. I know it has, you know, the native, I'll just call beautiful AI formats for web-based presenting. It has a PDF export. Yeah. It has a PowerPoint export, which I don't know if I've actually gotten that to work yet. And does it have something else? Am I missing something?
No, that's it.
On the whole editability, how do you envision presentations being used? Are they going to be PDF deliverables? Are they going to be speaker support that's live and editable right beforehand? Should a number change? What are you kind of thinking there? How does that fall in line?
I mean, this is tricky, right? So there's PowerPoint. There is this little piece of software called PowerPoint that people have heard of. And, you know, the question is, are we competing with PowerPoint? And certainly in some extent we are, although I could argue that there'll always be a place for PowerPoint. And place for PowerPoint is when you want to build something that is more designed, more special, more fancy than what you can do in our tool. You know, there's always going to be a place for those bespoke presentations that go beyond that. That also being said, though, we recognize that, you know, the people who do use our tool, it is a new tool and you can't be completely dependent on, you know, having your presentations, which are such a critical path sort of mechanism for people, locked into our system. So we did create the export. I will acknowledge that the current export is fairly unsophisticated and basically exports stuff as static images. So it's really not a tool to start in beautiful AI and finish in PowerPoint at this point. It's something we're going to address, but we haven't yet. Our hope is ultimately that people would keep their presentations in the tool and present their presentations from within the tool. And there are a lot of benefits to doing that. Things like analytics and being online and security and tracking your presentations, who's viewed them, who sent them, locking them down. I mean, this was one of the things that SlideRocket originally wanted to address, was that, you know, PowerPoint is a very insecure platform. When you send me a PowerPoint, I can do anything I want with it. I can edit it. I can send it to your competitor. You have no control over it once it leaves, you know, once you send it in an email. That's not the case with an online tool. Everything is kind of locked down and secure. And that seems to be a better solution long term.
There's a huge user base for that type of use. And I think PowerPoint, Keynote to a lesser degree, and everyone else is trying to figure out how to capture that. And obviously, that's your core focus. So that makes it easy. So on the idea of beautiful or elegant coding and simple and elegant presentation or technical beauty within presentation, I'm going to take the route of the PowerPoint file setup itself for this topic. Doing things correct just makes life so much better for you or others later. And my example would be, we've all gotten the presentation where there's a shape and then a text box stacked on top of the shape. It's just a mess to move around, align, animate, you know, when the slide needs to be updated or, you know, just anything you want to do. Those are not beautiful or elegant ways of doing it. I'm going to say coding as in the way of the setup, you know, or using, if it's a properly set up template, using the placeholders is a much better for future efforts than adding random text boxes, because there are preset formatting and consistency lends itself in most presentations to aesthetics and beauty. Utilizing those preset alignment elements, those things that are coded, and I'm putting air quotes up, those things that are coded in, they just make content align and become naturally beautiful. I'm looking at a presentation that that my design team did in Beautiful AI. We have this core one called Donut Land, and it's really fun. One of our designers created it a while ago, and we use it on all presentation software just the way to test it, because it's very, very visual. Everybody likes donuts. And you know what? The one thing I'll say that kind of tags in with what Nolan was saying here, this presentation, if I were to export this as a PDF, most people would assume it was done in InDesign and just exported as a PDF, or maybe Illustrator with, you know, inserted raster images. It just has a very nice, very balanced look to it. From a presentation standpoint, it wasn't hard to set up. This one had a timeline that was really finicky. We went through about three different iterations to make it fit. And some of the grid layouts was a little too grid-like for what the actual aesthetic being desired was. But I think that, Mitch, that everybody that would look at this, the designer would say, oh, yeah, that wasn't PowerPoint. That was somebody, you know, exported, you know, did an InDesign, exported a PDF for you to utilize. By the way, we get tons of those because designers, traditional designers, I'll just say, they don't know how to utilize PowerPoint as a design tool. So they do everything in the tools they know, which there's no problem at all there. And then we have to reverse engineer them and make them in PowerPoint so they're editable and can be used at a corporate event or something like that. So we do lots of backwards design where we know the end result. Now we're going to put it there. I would say if somebody gave us this, we would have no problem at all saying this is well done and easily could be done there. Right.
That's great.
Hey, Troy, can I go back and give a tip that I learned this year? Ooh. So you just mentioned that awful thing where people have like a blue circle and then they put a text box on top of it because they want it to fit in. I learned at the summit from Taylor Kroonquist, you take those two and you take the text box and you take the circle behind it and you combine them. And suddenly now you have a circle with the text in it. So instead of copying and pasting or changing the text box to a circle, you can, again, make PowerPoint work for you. So I never even thought about doing that.
You know, this whole challenge of what you're talking about, the technical beauty of building a presentation, is almost one of the things that we kind of hope to address. I mean, I think one of the things that always drove me bonkers about PowerPoint was, as a designer, that lack of being able to enforce the control when I distributed templates or presentations to other people, you know, and being able to say, these are the colors you use, these, you know, and I can see, you see this all the time in the template that the template of templates, you know, where it has instructions built in, don't put too many bullet points, don't do this. I mean, that's just a poor experience to not be able to, as a designer, sort of really lock down how the template is used and what the options are. And so one of the things that we're excited about as we move into, you know, more of a pro product is building a tool that people can create these sort of template systems, customize them, and then distribute them across the organization and be ensured that people can only use them the way they expect them to use them.
That is such a huge ask in the industry. So obviously you've heard it and addressed it. It's PowerPoint has goods and bads. Keynote even more so, because Keynote doesn't even really follow a constraint pattern. Keynote is an open design tool, in my opinion, and I love it. I use it all the time. But this is definitely a tool that can help the non-expert really create continuity among all their content and presentations.
Hey, Mitch, charting and data viz, you know, some days seems like it's getting all the love these days in terms of, you know, beautiful design and effective design, sort of, you know, over presentation. But it's obviously a part of presentation. It's a very important part. What's your view of sort of data viz? And, you know, when you were building beautiful AI, how did you approach communicating numbers?
I mean, it's hugely important. I mean, you know, the way to get away from bullet point hell is to do visualizations and other, you know, infographics to communicate numbers and less so processes or organization or things like that. And that's where the tool really sort of starts to shine, is that its ability to do these sort of data visualizations and again, just like smart art, but more in an intent-based sort of end result path than sort of as a component mm-hmm. of a slide. So, you know, in our tool, you know, you say you want to communicate growth, or you want to compare, or you want to talk about process or time, and it gives you a bunch of different templates. What I think is really important about visualization is that, not to overdo it, especially when it comes to charts. I mean, data should be about telling a story. And there's lots of different ways you can do that, but it's rarely going to be some incredibly detailed chart with, you know, dozens and dozens of data points across it, because what story is that telling unless it's we have a lot of data, which is probably not the point you're trying to make. So from day one, we really built tools to help start creating good design around especially charts, things like being able to highlight points, you know, in a visual way, or you know, add axis annotations, or even, you know, decide that maybe a chart isn't right and maybe you just want to show a number. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you want to distill it all down to one value instead of showing a lot. But, you know, if you get a chance, when you check out the charts, I mean, there's some advanced stuff in there where you can right click on a point, or not, maybe not right click, click on a point and show change in value really easily, or mark lines as projected, switch between different charts. And I think ultimately it all comes down to, again, telling a story and communicating as succinctly as possible. Yeah. Instead of showing everything.
That's perfect. So what you're saying is I train my users on how to simplify their charts, how to start with a PowerPoint chart and take things away. I think you just said that your program, it starts simply.
It starts simply, but then it gives you the ability to really highlight aspects of it. I mean, a big challenge in this tool was, you know, I throw my data on the slide and it lays it out and that's great. But now how do I emphasize? How do I sort of highlight different aspects of that? And so you'll find in the tool, there's sort of this one click kind of emphasize button. And it will basically, so if you've got a bunch of bullet points or a bunch of arrow bars, whatever, circles, and you want to emphasize one, you click on emphasize and all the other ones will fade back and that one will be emphasized. And again, so it just takes the onus off of the user from having to worry about design and things like that. But in the chart world, you know, we definitely looked at good design, well-designed charts and things that we found aesthetically appealing, and yes, sort of started there. Now, the charts can get complex because sometimes you need that stuff. And so that those options are there. You can do waterfall charts. You can do, you know, combination charts between line and stacked and all that crazy stuff. But the best charts are the ones that are simplest and have as little axis data as possible and as little points as possible. And
Nolan, you really disagree 100%, don't you?
I mean, I do a ton of data.
So Mitch, Nolan has a trademarked, it's trademarked, correct? Nolan, you have a trademarked term? Mm-hmm. Go ahead and list it off, because Mitch probably isn't aware.
Oh, it's the 1 second chart. It's how I frame all my data viz training, which I do. And a 1 second chart means it doesn't take you 1 second to create it, but it takes your audience 1 second to read it, or as close to that. So instead of getting bogged down with referenceable tables and charts and all this other things that you have to wade through, it's as simple as possible to get that message. Did anyone read Good Charts by Scott Baronato? I think that's how it's pronounced. It came out last year. Has anyone read
it? I haven't read it yet, though.
Oh, it's good. So it's another dad of his book, sort of on the more entry level side, but I really like it. And it had my favorite quote of last year, which is, he's talking about, you know, creating, you know, good charts and how people want them to be pretty. And he says, it's not a better chart because it's prettier. It's prettier because it's a better chart.
Nice.
And by that, he means he's approaching it as this is the exactly. story. We're highlighting the story. And if you do all that in the right way, it ends up being pretty. Rather than sort of that outside in, you know, approach.
And that's what you could say the same thing about slides in general.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Hey, before we leave charting, because this is obviously, as we work with lots of medical device and lots of financial industry, charts are huge. And how do we make them look nice is definitely a difficult conversation we have on an ongoing basis, to the point of not being argumentative, but like, okay, we'll just give you a few options. Here's what you want. Here's what we recommend. And here's kind of like the maximum we'd allow you to do for data on our recommendation scale. Tell us where we have to go. But I will say this about Beautiful AI, because this is one thing I did pull out of it. So Mitch, we have one of my sample decks. I just opened it up here. We created a revenue trend line, which was, first of all, so it's a revenue. It shows the annual revenue for the year. One thing it did, as you were just talking about, and I hadn't even realized it did it until you've said it, is that we had a set point, as in the today mark. And so we created a, what do you guys, it's not a line, spline? Hold on. Yes, spline. Yeah, we used a spline chart on this one. So it's a curved line. But everything that was at when this was created, everything on the left side of it, in other words, dates that have already occurred, they're a solid opaque color fill. Everything that's in the future projections mark, it automatically made it a muted or semi-transparent color, and the line itself turned to a dotted line. We didn't think about it. Now, that's something as a designer I would put in place. And if I was working in PowerPoint or Keynote, I'd have to manually do that. Mm-hmm. But Beautiful AI actually did that automated. It's very, very cool. I'm giving a compliment here, but it's that idea of how do we make data that actually can be interpreted really quickly. Nolan, I won't use your term because you're trademarked and I don't want to get in legal trouble, but you know, it does a really cool job of doing stuff like that. There were a few things about the chart in and of itself. I would have liked to make the data labels a little larger. It was a little difficult to do, and some things there. But just that idea of actually interpreting the data into what the intent is was really, really cool.
Yeah, the number one question the number one support ticket we get so far is how do I make the font? How do I change the font size? And you don't change the font size in our tool, because just like if you were as a designer to create a chart for somebody and your customer or your client was sort of like, you wouldn't expect them to open it up and make the font size on the data label bigger. You know, it's just not, it's a difficult challenge for us, you know, where to let loose those constraints and opinions. You know, but it's a learning process as well. So as we get feedback on these different things, we can adapt these templates. You know, maybe the data labels should be bigger, things like that. Or maybe there are places where people do want different options and we'll expose them. I mean, one of the cool features that's in there that I really like is if your data has a scale, so say you're entering numbers in the thousands or the millions, mm-hmm. hopefully it's in the millions, maybe it's even the billions. You know, one of the things that you see all the time is where those numbers are, they're not abbreviated well. You know, you really want to represent them as 10K or 10M with a dollar sign. And so the tool will do all that sort of automation for you instead of you having to like do all this formatting or entering the numbers mm-hmm. in different ways. So those are other ways to, again, make your data look better.
Yeah, it's all cool. There are some very drill down features in there. So let's switch, Nolan, let's go to my topic. I know you brought up charts. Let's bring up one that I love. And so let's say, what is beautiful and not beautiful when using animation in a presentation?
Well,
I think the checkerboard transition is beautiful.
There you go.
Come right out.
Oh, I like the design.
You like the paper airplane?
That's
I have actually made use of the paper airplane and the origami crumpled up, the crumpled up paper before, but it was all in to prove a just point. Well, I mean,
part
I did
of the story.
Yeah,
it was part of the story.
Sandy, what do you think about animation?
Well, no, to your point, your crumpled up paper was a part of the story. So any animation that is ever added needs to contribute to the story. And I'm taking animation literally here. If I'm doing, I have an infographic and I have a process flow that's contributing to the story. Animating one bullet at a time is not. I suppose someone could argue, but that's the flow I want to tell the story. It's just not animating one bullet of text at a time.
Yeah. It's like film editing, right? Yeah. If you're noticing all the cuts and the transitions, it's probably not a good film editor, right?
Right.
It's sort of seamless in the background.
And I think that's pretty much all that needs to be said about that. I mean, that absolutely true. That animation needs to tell the story and anything else is gratuitous.
Yes.
You know, this is a place where we haven't quite matured as much as I'd like. But, you
as
know,
a society. One of the, or-
no, no, I'm sorry. I'm in beautiful AI. The best example I can give is that, you know, we have a template that has these arrows that are kind of these arrow bars that you can type text in and make different lengths. And they animate, the arrows grow exactly like you'd expect to. And sort of the logic was, there's really only one way that you would ever really ever need to animate these arrow bars. So why bother building a whole system where somebody has to figure out whether they're going to fly them in or fade them in or, you know, slide them in or whatever it is. There's basically, you know, the animation is used to tell the story of the visualization.
So on that one, it's really cool because I really wish not to say anything disparaging here, but PowerPoint could take a few lessons here in designing stuff. When you do this arrow one, so you have four arrows, they're horizontal. They actually have kind of the one I have is like the 3D perspective almost. The length is just a slider bar. So you just kind of slide the little length bar. I thought that was really cool from a usability standpoint for a non-designer. But yeah, the animation is very nice.
And if you play back that template, that slide, they'll animate in for you automatically. You don't have to do anything.
Did we talk about animation enough? I think we just said. I'm going to summarize it with what Mitch said. You know, animation needs to lead the story. Everything else is gratuitous. I'm good right there. What else do we have? How about this? How about this is kind of a good one to end on because this is very big topic. How strong is the connection between design and storytelling? And can we better increase the impact or effectiveness of a presentation with bettering design and storytelling? Mitch, examples, ideas, because this is a big focus.
Back to that sort of dual axes thing, Mitch, but they are connected and they can be connected in some way, right?
Yeah, they're different axes, but no one's ever going to argue that you wouldn't want a score of 10 in both axes. I mean, that will always be better than not. Mm-hmm. There's design of storytelling and then there's design of the slides, and those are two different things. And certainly your storytelling could use design as well. And that's a whole nother topic, I suppose. I think at the end of the day, design means better communication, and better communication means a more effective presentation. And it's as simple as that. And that holds no matter whether it's a startup pitch deck or HR manager talking about the new benefits plan or the product manager talking about the roadmap or whatever, you know, you might be presenting about, a student presenting their school project. I mean, effective is effective. And ultimately, that's what presentations are designed to do. They're designed to communicate, and the more effective they are, the better they communicate. I mean, it's pretty obvious stuff.
I like expanding the definition of design. I mean, that's obviously something we do. Design is not just aesthetics. And I think we can expand the definition of beautiful too. That's also not just aesthetics.
Absolutely.
So Nolan, I love the idea of expanding the definition of design because we are always expanding the definition of presentation and audience and how do we prepare for it. But in our case, we're talking about presentation design to support the presenter's story. And I think that's sometimes missed. That goes right back to the gratuitous animation. Did it really support the story? It goes right back to too much content in a slide. Did we really support the presenter's story?
Decorate. Design could be.
Oh, yeah. That was your, I love your little analogy from episode or two ago about the guy who wanted to add the computer icon just to decorate the slide.
Yep, exactly.
You know, design can be intricate. It can be layered. It can be animated richly and still support the presenter, or design can be simple, stark, and almost nothing, and put the design to put the focus on the presenter. I see both ends of that design spectrum. They're both good. They both can be good, I should say, and both can create that strong connection between design and storytelling. Better design, exactly what you said, Mitch. It's going to focus the audience on the message, the story, whether it's complex or simplistic in design. It just has to be effective. And that's kind of our job, no matter what the software is to create design that coordinates with the presenter and creates a connection between the presenter and design. Or it's the job of newer software to give the non-expert that expertise infusion so that they don't have to think it through and basically create bad or ugly slides, where we started with the whole conversation. So yeah, there's a strong connection between design and storytelling. And I like what you said, better design equals better communication and more effective presentation.
End of story.
And there it is, another amazing presentation-focused conversation. I would like to thank not only Nolan and Sandy for breaking away from the many design studio needs and finding time for this podcast, but especially for Mitch for letting us enjoy his perspective on presentations, getting some new information about his exciting new venture, Beautiful AI. The link to Beautiful AI online presentation software is in the show notes, or just type it like it sounds. It's beautiful.ai, as in artificial intelligence. Our next episode is going to be that conversation, roundtable conversation at the Microsoft MVP Summit. So we'll explain more about that on the next episode. But the really cool note is that's going to be the 50th episode of this presentation podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. I just realized that now. And everyone else, if you're here listening, hey, have a great week. Thanks for joining the presentation podcast conversation.
Well, I'll start with pro and tech tips. It's not a new one. I think both you, Troy and Nolan, have mentioned PPT tools in the past. It's PP tools. Steve Rinsberg, if you go to the link that's in the show notes, Steve Rinsberg has numerous add-ins. He calls them PowerPoint tools for power users. Everything from data merging to, he has a starter set that's free, starter set with more information, and optimizer, which I'll take that one out because optimizer has been discontinued.
Image export.
Exactly. Just check it out. If you have a minute, you'll find something that you can use. Bare minimum, that starter kit. I recommend it.
I'll stick with the whole idea of software add-ins, but mine's going to be just, I think this is Windows only. It might be Mac-based. I am not certain about this one, but 7-Zip. It's a small utility for either compressing files, make a folder or a whole bunch of images into a single zip file. What I really use it for, though, is getting inside the XML file. So take a PowerPoint file, right-click on it, go to the 7-Zip little option in the dialog there, and just say open, and it opens up the XML file. So I can look inside the zip. I can go into the media file. I can pull out the videos really quick and instantly, all of them at once. It's just a very cool, very free, small utility app that I think every computer should have installed.
So my tech tip is a simple one. It's iStock. For years, I've been on Shutterstock and then was just sort of getting tired with the selection. And I felt there was a lot of, just crap, in it. And just like too much bad stuff. So this year I moved to iStock. It's costing me more for fewer images, but so far I'm pretty happy with the selection and sort of the new imagery.
That's interesting. Sorry. I switched over to Shutterstock from iStock.
Because, you went the other way.
Yeah. Well, only in when we, we've been doing this for a couple of years now, or close to a couple of years. And I know you used Shutterstock early on, so I gave it a try.
Yeah. Hey, Mitch, while you're still with us, hold on, interrupt, because this is a great little segue. What is Beautiful AI? Because it has a image insert option. Where are you pulling your images from? Obviously, everything's royalty free and able to be utilized and published and all that, I'm assuming.
So we pull those images from Unsplash, has an API,
okay.
And Pixabay as well. And so they both have free stock photography resources, which you know, is great. I mean, the breadth isn't quite as large as what you'd find in a Shutterstock, but it can't beat the price. Mm-hmm. And then we built
our own. And the offerings are really good. I mean, when you go under those skies, there's some beautiful images there. What was the second one? Unsplash? What was the other one?
Pixabay.
I'm not familiar with that one. I might have to do a little research.
There's actually a number of these. There's Pixabay. There's also one called Pexels, P-E-X-E-L.
Yeah,
I'm
familiar with that. Yep, I've used Pexels.
Yeah, they're pretty good. There's a little bit of overlap sometimes, but Pixabay tends to be a little less artsy. Unsplash is kind of like hipster photos. you know, when you go to a businessman, like the hipster businessman with the beer drinking coffee. Pixabay is a little bit, you know, more mainstream.
It's great. There's resources out there. I go back to the days of buying a CD with, you know, 10 to 50 images for $500 and trying to figure out how to use enough of those images over the course of projects to pay for it.
And then the other thing we did is we built our own icon, all our own icons.
I was going to ask about that in a separate conversation. So they're internal design. Nice.
I mean, you know, again, maybe this is a little bit anal, but I want everything to look good. And the thing is, when you use a tool like Noun Project or you upload your own icons, there's nothing that keeps you from picking icons that stylistically don't match.
Exactly.
So we wanted all the icons to be the same. And we actually have different styles of them that aren't released yet. But there's like a thin version and a sketchy version, which is just really nice knowing that every icon exists in every different style so they can match your theme.
Oh, very cool. Well, now that you've already given a bunch of tips, this is our pro tips and tech tips. We just get to talk about anything cool that we're kind of excited about at the moment. Besides these image resources, anything you'd like to contribute or offer up to anybody
listening?
I'll
just shamelessly plug, you know, Beautiful AI and I'd love it.
Perfect.
It's brand new. We just launched this thing. We're really looking for feedback, you know, that is the lifeblood of a company like this, is like what people are having trouble with, what people are excited by with. The response so far has been pretty tremendous, so that's exciting, but you only kind of hear good stuff. You want to hear some bad stuff as well.
Should we give a little, how much does it cost to use Beautiful AI?
It's totally free right now. It will always be a free version. We will add some features down the road that we will charge for. They'll be mostly around things like collaboration and sort of more enterprise functionality. But pretty much everything that's there today will continue to be free. You know, we're continually going to be adding new templates and new features. We just added better internationalization support this week. We were actually pretty surprised how quickly things went international when we launched, and we're already in 119 countries. You know, and so we're getting a lot of, you know, I can't type Chinese characters, you know.
Hey, how does, I got a side question here now that we're really diverging. How does your, because you're one of the few web-based apps that has a chat with us button, like prominent, not hidden. Is that live manned or are you excited about that feature now that you're in 119 countries?
You know, it's not live manned 24 hours a day. So you know, I'd have to ask the support person how they feel about it.
That's a big, bold thing to put in there, a live chat feature for a web-based app that's always available. So I just thought that was kind of, it was one of those little things we put in our notes, like, hey, look at this. This is novel and unique and gutsy. You know,
the reality is we're getting a lot of people using the product. We're not getting a lot of support. I mean, there have been some issues. There have been a few bugs that, you know, we're trying to address, but it's a pretty easy tool to use. You know, there's not a lot of expert knowledge to know. It just sort of does what you want it to do. And, you know, the biggest challenge is like, how do I do the things that I want to do? And the question we always have to ask back is, why do you really want to do that?
Yeah.
this is not a tool. If you want to be an artist or a designer and make things, you know, if you're somebody who wants to make things look the way you want them to look, this is a tool if you're the person who doesn't want to do that, but wants to do it quickly and wants to be assured that what they get looks good. You know, we talked a lot about beautiful, but the other big thing about this product is speed and how much faster you can create a presentation. And, you know, my 8-year-old son can create an amazing presentation in 15 minutes, having never used PowerPoint in his life. That's pretty compelling.
Sure. This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, where you can get lots of free downloads and goodies. And if you're interested in on-site training for presentation or data visualization, give me a call or swing by nolanhamescreative.com for more info.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and my blog at presentationwhiz.biz and the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org.
This is Mitch Grasso from Beautiful AI. You can check us out at www.beautifulai and sign up is free.
Awesome. And this is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional graphic design studio focused on professional presentation design with an in-house team of designers. Find us at tlccreative.com, thepowerpointblog.com. And I've got to update this one. I've been saying it wrong all the time. Facebook.com/TLC Creative Services. If you go to Facebook.com/TLC Creative, it turns out that's the other TLC Creative, which is a laser light show. It's very cool stuff, but it's not us. They're also based in Southern California, but it's definitely not us. So, and yeah, somebody on our team just pointed out that I was literally sending people to a different Facebook. So Facebook.com/TLC Creative Services. Thanks for joining us.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.